Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Everybody just get along right now. I don't know why we need all this discord here on Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We got some great ones to help us out this hour. It feels like, you know what this is? Everybody, as we talk about the NFL preseason right now, and while Janae Agumake, our esteemed co-host, might be in the middle of the WNBA season coming off of the Olympic break, we're all in preseason mode around here. We're getting right. We're getting ready on all this stuff here. And so it only feels right that we get practice on a football Monday. We got top five, bottom five that we're going to figure up, the best and worst from the NFL's preseason weekend that was. We're going to talk to Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, who also serves as the preseason analyst in the booth for the Los Angeles Rams. She was on the call for the Rams-Chargers game this weekend. And we'll also keep it rocking with 3 and Out, our preview for the upcoming NFL season. We got the Cleveland Browns coming up in the next hour here. We'll visit out there, try and figure out why Baker Mayfield hasn't gotten the bag yet. And I will say, before we get into this sought-off NFL preseason, its effects on some of these quarterback battles, because I think we got four real marquee quarterback battles going on in the NFL right now. Three of them involving rookies that I think should very realistically start right away. We'll get to how what we're seeing right now, the changes in the NFL calendar, are going to affect that in just a minute here. We'll also talk to Om Young-Masuk about the Clippers trade for Eric Bledsoe. But before we get to any of that, at Mike Golic Jr. on Twitter is where you can tweet me. And Greg Thompson tweeted me about this. False advertising is something that is near and dear to my heart here, because you guys know I have maintained a long-held stance and tradition that when we look at some of the great candies out there, that the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, owned by its holiday shapes counterpart here, when you get to the trees, when you get to the eggs, when you get to the Halloween pumpkin, when you get the Reese's shapes, infinitely better candy than just the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, because you got a better chocolate to peanut butter ratio. But Greg brings up something that I was not prepared for today. I didn't know that Reese's was getting in on the preseason action, that they are now selling a Reese's football. And if I've missed out on this for years, then shame on me. But he brings up something that I think is important to ask, because I'm seeing a shot of this that I tweeted saying we need answers, that there are laces advertised, cut out of the chocolate, revealing the peanut butter innards. But on the actual candy, I'm not seeing any laces. So I'm going to need an answer from the folks here at Reese's of why we're not seeing the laces described on this. And I hear you folks saying, well, we get more chocolate out of it. The holiday shapes win because there's a little less chocolate. Walk with me on this one. Walk into the saving light of the Reese's shapes. We're going to effort answers on this at Mike Golic Jr. If you've got a hold of the Reese's football, I need to see pictures to find out if this laceless football is a one-off or part of a problem here. Now, Janae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio, again, at Mike Golic Jr., as we effort to get to the bottom of this. We're in preseason for everyone right now, and if the folks at Reese's made a mistake, that's fine. I'm still going to eat the hell out of their candy bars. But in the meantime, looking at this NFL preseason right now, I think we got four quarterback battles that we've really circled and have our eyes on here. One of the first and foremost ones that's going to come up is the one going on in New Orleans between Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill. Jameis Winston, the former starter for the Bucs, and Taysom Hill, the toy that Sean Payton loves to play with more than anything and anyone, so much so that he took a Hall of Famer routinely off the field to run that offense. And through one preseason game, less than stellar. In a game with six turnovers in it, we're not really going to find a lot to work with there. Jameis and Taysom both had one each, so not going to be much to write home about. And that situation's a little different. You've had both guys in the building there for a while. Both guys know the offense here. Both going in with a team that has a lot of winning parts still around it, but has the Michael Thomas issue hanging over its head after he elected to have an offseason surgery much later in the timeline that could put him out for a while. In the post-Drew Brees era, they got a lot of things that they need to worry about there. So I want to put that one aside for a second and focus on the rookie quarterback matchups, because we got three of those that are going to dominate here. Because we know Zach Wilson's going to start for the New York Jets, and we know Trevor Lawrence is going to start for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Now, our ESPN NFL front office insider, Mike Tannenbaum, thinks that because we know that, Urban Meyer should adjust his plans already. Here's Mike Tannenbaum on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning.
Jacksonville's offensive line was really poor. So we're talking about the development of all these young quarterbacks. How about the development of Urban Meyer? Does he learn anything from Zach Taylor a year ago? Puts Joe Burrow in behind a bad offensive line. myself, Rex Ryan said, hey, Joe Burrow has a really good chance of getting hurt, tears his ACL. The way Jacksonville's offensive line played, when you look at it, they gave up 4 sacks, 8 pressures. Do they either, A, start guarding Minshew, I think unlikely, or more fundamentally, guys, do they change their approach? Do they say to Daryl Bevel, Brian Schottenheimer, hey, we have to be balanced because we can't let Trevor Lawrence get hurt. And if I'm Urban Meyer, I'm not at Ohio State anymore. I'm not walking down there with 5 blue chip offensive linemen.
And he's right, I think, on the latter portion of that. Because you still want to get the guy reps. But we had this discussion, myself, Mina Kimes is going to join us here in about 10 minutes, about Joe Burrow last year, about how you adjust the game plan around a team with a bad offensive line to help your quarterback. And man, for this team that drafted with their second first-round pick a running back out of Clemson to go into a running back room that already had a back last year who was top 5 in yards in the league and brought Carlos Hyde over, has a stacked backfield, you would assume they would lean on that to try and take some of these hits off Trevor Lawrence, but we saw in this game inconsistency up front there. Deep developing two-man route combinations on some of those plays. Like, those aren't in the bag. Trevor Lawrence ran an offense at Clemson behind a line that, despite the success of that team, was never a great offensive line. So he knows a thing or two about having to get the ball out of his hands quicker. Part of the appeal with him is he's going to be able to move it. But that's not going to be. That's an adjustment that they're going to make. What adjustments do you make with some of these other players because of the shortened preseason? Because you look around, I know that a lot of people are looking at the situation right now with Justin Fields in Chicago. I think he should be the obvious starter, not just based on what we saw in that preseason game, but based on the situation. Matt Nagy and company got a win now. It's another team with an offensive line that's going to have some issues. Take the quarterback that can do more for you and make more plays. Andy Dalton's coming over there in year one on that team too. I know he's a veteran, but it is year one for him too. Justin Fields looks poised already, and I say you throw him out there through that. Get him the reps up underneath him. Try and make that happen for him. That one seems obvious to me, even if we haven't heard it announced yet, because I don't need to hear it announced for the outside world. I need to know where the reps are being allocated. Because that's the difference now that you got this shortened preseason coming up is, normally, for anyone that doesn't know it, when we had 4 weeks of preseason, first two games you'd see a lot of the backups in. Third game was traditionally the dress rehearsal. So the first 2 weeks, you're not game planning the team you're going against. It's the vanilla offense and defense. You're going out there good on good, trying to iron sharpen iron through practice. Week three, all of a sudden, you're going to bring out some show teams. You're going to run those cards for the offense that's going to get their dress rehearsal. How do we go through game week and figure this out? And that's when you start to kind of see the writing on the wall. For dudes on the back end of the roster like me, when you were used to maybe seeing the starters get 6 reps, the second team get 4, you get 4, and all of a sudden those numbers start to tilt way far away, you kind of see the writing on the wall. That's when I'm curious to see how these coaches start to allocate this. Because I think those decisions are going to have to get made a lot sooner. Justin Fields, it should be made now where you start to get him the lion's share of the reps based on how he performed in preseason one. Mac Jones, same deal in New England. With what he did, wasn't as much of a high-end output, only threw for 87 yards, 13-19, but was every bit as efficient as you need him to look in that offense. Trey Lance is the wild card on this one. I heard a lot of folks saying this morning, I think it was Shea Cornett filling in on KJZ, that, man, listen, you've got Jimmy Garoppolo out there who's a veteran that they've won with here. This can be more akin to what we saw in Kansas City, where Alex Smith, shout out to our new coworker, starts for a year while you let Patrick Mahomes develop behind him because you've got a playoff caliber roster around him. And I get that, but man, I'm sorry what I saw. And I understand it wasn't always the prettiest with Trey Lance, especially as that wore on, but he probably got the biggest sample size of any of these quarterbacks. And him and Zach Wilson, man, you can see the talent that people got drunk on in those spots. You can see the way it pops off their hands different. Trey Lance hasn't played meaningful football basically in 2 years. Played the one game last year, the showcase game against Central Arkansas while he was at North Dakota State, but has been working at that FCS level and hadn't played football in a while. You need to get him as much of this as possible. And I think in that offense, we saw all the ways he can be built to succeed in that. And so I think when you look at these matchups, whether it is Mac and Cam Newton, whether it is Trey and Jimmy G, whether it is Fields and Andy Dalton, you got to get those rookies out there. You got to get them playing ball now. Most of it because of what they've already shown, but especially in the case of Trey Lance here, what can be with that guy if you start to really give someone with his level of reported football aptitude the chance to go and log some of these meaningful snaps. Now, these rookie quarterbacks were making moves.
Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports.
But coming up next, we'll see if anyone separated themselves more than the rest as we look to try and make these analysis on a heightened pace because of the shortened preseason. We'll check in with Mina Kimes next here on ESPN Radio.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Mike Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr., we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We're working through Football Monday. We're getting our reps up right now. And to help us out with that, one of the best football minds we got around here, our ESPN NFL Live co-host and the voice of the Rams in the booth for the NFL preseason, Mina Kimes, joins us now on the Goodyear Hotline. Mina, what's going on?
Hey, it's preseason for all of us. We all need to get our sea legs underneath us.
That is true. We're getting back to it right now. Sea legs, I'm sure, pun intended right there, Mina. But as we kind of dive back into it right now, it's good, though, because I feel like we've had to get our reps up early because of all these rookie quarterbacks, Mina. We had five of the first-round rookies all make their first appearance on the field this weekend, and so that's going to get us extra hot and bothered. And I feel like I might be especially susceptible to that because I'm looking down at the ones where we have actual quarterback battles right now, Mina, with Mac Jones and Cam Newton, with Trey Lance and Jimmy Garoppolo, and Justin Fields and Andy Dalton. I'm in the start all the rookies camp and let the rest sort them out here. Am I missing the mark on any one of these? Like, of those rookies I mentioned, is there one that you look at and think could actually do well to still ride the pine at this point?
Well, first I'll say I don't think you're alone, judging by the crowd reactions that every single one of those rookies entering the game, all fan bases want all of the rookies to start immediately. And I think there is a case for all of them, frankly, to varying degrees. To me, Justin Fields and Mac Jones in particular really asserted their ability to not only potentially provide an edge for their teams, but also I think the fit with the particular teams they'd be starting for, it makes sense to start them from week one. In New England, where you've got what could be a dominant defense and a run game and a very good offensive line, having a quarterback like Mac Jones demonstrate that quick release poise in the pocket he did suggests that he's ready sooner rather than later. And then with Fields, it's different. You want a dual threat quarterback like him who can give you that sort of playmaking upside that Dalton can't. You really saw that on display. I think it's the most debatable with Trey Lance of the three because you saw from him really what you saw in college, which is incredibly high ceiling as both a passer and a runner, although his rushing ability wasn't really on display being the preseason. Kyle's not going to have him on many designed runs. But you also saw after that first dynamite bomb, some of the, inconsistency in accuracy, I think, that you might have expected, given so how few reps he had and how long it's been, really, since he's played football. So I think that's the situation where you could see Jimmy starting a little bit longer, but I expect Trey Lance to be the quarterback at some point this season.
Mina, to that end, a lot of people will make the comparison to what we saw in Kansas City with Alex Smith and Patrick Mahomes. Is that apt? Like, is that a model that actually applies to the 49ers with the rest of their roster in the position this team is in?
You know, it's definitely the team where the comp is the closest, but I think Alex Smith was playing at a higher level at that point in his career than Jimmy Garoppolo has been lately, frankly. And I also think, as much as that analogy or I guess that case study gets brought up, there's also a case to be made for your young quarterback getting reps. And you could probably argue, too, by the way, that if Mahomes had gotten in earlier than I think it's week 17 that season, he probably would have figured it out and won games for them. That's not to say they did it the wrong way. Obviously, everything's worked out as best as possible in Kansas City. But I think when you got a quarterback like Trey, who doesn't have a ton of experience, it's not going to hurt him to face some adversity early on, even if he doesn't look perfect from the jump.
Janae Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio, talking to ESPN NFL analyst Mina Kimes. Mina, speaking of some early adversity here, it felt like Trevor Lawrence was under siege a lot in that game for Jacksonville. Yeah. The number one overall pick went out, was sacked, I believe, on his first snap here. There were some good moments in there, Mina, but did what we see make you more concerned for his rookie season based on what's around him, maybe as much as what we saw from him himself?
You know, a little bit, given that some of the starters were in front of him in Jacksonville. But I think with Trevor, it's not just a matter of him figuring it out. He wasn't holding on to it terribly long, but I think it's also a matter of the play callers there, Daryl Bevel and Ron Schottenheimer, the quarterback's coach, moving the pocket. You know, he has incredible mobility in addition to an incredible arm, and getting him out of adverse situations through scheme. And then, of course, you saw when he did have a ton of time, he launched that absolute bomb to Marvin Jones. It's a nice group of skill players they have at Jaguars. But I think it's certainly the probably weak link. Well, I guess that's at a tight end on that offense. And Trevor is going to have to figure out how to play around it at times, but the coaches will as well.
Mina, we'd be remiss if we didn't make use of your expertise. For anyone that's not aware, you're in the booth covering the Rams preseason games. You got to look at Rams Chargers, and one player we didn't see was Matthew Stafford, who was brought out to Los Angeles to be the difference maker. But based on what you guys have talked to around camp there, what is the buzz like about what they've seen so far, early returns on Matt Stafford, just his presence on that team?
Yeah, Sean McVay, he doesn't really temper the enthusiasm when it comes to Stafford, as you know. You know, we didn't see him playing, obviously, in the preseason, but one player we did see was Tutu Atwell, who's a second-round rookie wide receiver and just flashed the extraordinary speed he did at Louisville, and I think that's relevant. Like, they drafted Atwell precisely because they want to take advantage of Stafford's deep throwing ability, which is a huge part of the reason why they made the trade for him, the hope that he's going to unlock this explosive passing game that Goff could not. And I think the combination of Atwell and Jackson, Deshaun Jackson rather, you know, who's going to be the starting wide receiver three behind Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, that's a pretty potent group of skill players. And I believe they expect Matthew Stafford to take full advantage of that group.
Mina, before we let you go, we're doing the NFL previews around here, much like if you haven't listened to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, doing division previews, going through the best of the NFL season, heading up to the start of the year. We're doing Browns and Ravens today. Mina, is there a team you're more surprised hasn't already locked up their starting quarterback between Baker Mayfield and Lamar Jackson here? Are you surprised that neither of these quarterbacks is under contract on a new deal heading into this season?
Not terribly surprised. I'd say if I had to pick one of them, it would probably be Lamar, you know, given that obviously he was a league MVP. And I don't think there's anyone who has any question about Baltimore committing to him long term. Whereas with Baker, I think given the fact that he's had sort of an up and down career trajectory since coming to the NFL, a lot of that through no fault of his own, by the way, some inconsistency, of course, in play caller and amongst other things. You'd think Baltimore would want to get something done with Lamar. But it's hard to say. You know, I obviously after the Josh Allen deal, the feeling is like, okay, well, there's your baseline, but that can also move the baseline for these teams because they might not want to pay either of them more than what Josh earned. And I personally don't think there's a huge rush to get a deal done in the same way like that teams like the Rams and the Eagles learned with their quarterbacks. Sometimes it's okay to wait.
Maybe learning from some of those cautionary tales. Learn lots of stuff. Download the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny wherever you get your podcast, and check her out on NFL Live and in the Rams booth this preseason. Thanks, Mina. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Mina Kimes, kind enough to join us here on the Goodyear Hotline. Coming up next, though, you can see Mina Kimes, Laura Rutledge and company, taunt Dan Orlovsky, have fun with Marcus Spears on NFL Live. That's the way it should be. Coming up next, why the hell is the NFL trying to fight that on the field? We'll get to it next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
As a fan, this is amazing. This is the time of the year.
This is what we talked about. This is real, man.
This is real.
Are you ready? Because I'm ready.
This is Freddie Coleman, and you know I'm ready.
This is Greedy. Northwestern is ready.
Ian Fitzsimmons here. I'm ready. So are Oklahoma and Texas. Sort of. The SEC.
Football is back, and it kicks off every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, and continues all day right here on ESPN Radio.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. here. We'll get to the NFL. Doing something inexplicable. Usually when the NFL decides to change a rule, I can draw a direct line back to something that at least makes sense. We might not always like it, but usually I can understand where it's coming from. The NFL stepped on this one in a way that I can't make sense of. But before we get to that, get you a little Sunday night baseball recap. The Dodgers completed a three-game sweep with a 14-4 win over the Mets on Sunday at Citi Field. Max Muncy hit a pair of two-run homers, and Max Scherzer worked out some troubles over six solid. This Sunday night baseball recap is brought to you by Samsung Galaxy. Get ready for Samsung Galaxy's Z Flip 3 5G and Z Fold 3 5G. Pre-order now at Samsung.com here. And man, the Mets, from bad to worse. Before the All-Star break, I think the Mets, according to Fangraphs, had a 78% chance of making the postseason. As of right now, that is currently sitting at 16.8% here. The NL East leading Atlanta Braves now sitting atop that one here. I'm really hoping, man, Trevor Scales, our good friend around here, I'm hoping good things for him in this Atlanta Braves squad. But man, oh man, for the Mets here, this has been like every bit of the turn that I'm sure real Mets fans saw coming. Right? Like, at some point, everyone expected the other shoe to drop on this. Not overly surprised. So, Sunday Night Baseball giving us a reminder that the Dodgers probably still going to be good at this whole baseball thing, and the Mets probably going to find a way to mess even the best of things up during this process. Now, speaking of messing up a good thing, the NFL announced its rule cracking down on taunting heading into this upcoming season. They put out a series of videos here, including one that highlighted a running back from this preseason getting up, dragging defenders on a 14-yard run, dragging what looked like eight defenders, a superhero-type play, getting up and flexing into defenders' face, saying this is the kind of play that the NFL is going to try and get out over the course of this upcoming season. Now, we see this all the time with the NFL, where we know how this is going to go, right? We're going to see some like inexplicably bad penalty calls from referees early on in the year. The first quarter of the season is going to be littered with yellow flags, the way it is when we emphasize things like offensive holding, the way it is when we emphasize things like DPI, the way we emphasize things like not landing on the quarterback and hits, all these NFL rules that we've had along the way. The difference with this one is, and I've seen this question asked, I know it's not an original question, but man, I'm joining in the chorus here. Who asked for this? Right? Like, who seriously was knocking down the NFL's doors saying, you know what we need to do? Stamp out the little bits of joy. Like, we're not that far removed from a celebration a couple off seasons ago where they finally were going to let these guys go out here and enjoy some of these moments together. And we saw it give birth to stuff like those end zone cameras, whole teams going over for these choreographed celebrations with one another. Like, it gave birth to something that was genuinely fun in the NFL. And this is a league under Roger Goodell, who came in as the law and order commissioner, that wasn't always known for that. So that felt like a big step forward. I can look at these other situations and say, you know what? When the league decided to enforce that penalty where you can't land directly on the quarterback, did I like it? No, because, man, it is hard enough for defensive lineman to get there. And I'm a former offensive lineman. Like, that is not something I was going to be predisposed to like. But man, I'm the son of a D lineman. I played D lineman in high school. You like hitting the quarterback. It's a tough thing to get to do. But I understood where it came from. If you're going to start paying these guys damn near $40 million a year, and they're the ones that are going to drive a league that's increasingly hell-bent on offense, I understand where it comes from. All these penalties that we call on defensive backs, the DPI, not being able to get hands on these receivers. Do I feel for my brothers in arms here? Because I've always said defensive backs are just little old linemen. Do I feel for the Dominique Foxworths of the world? Hell yeah, but I understand where it comes from. Because again, offense drives all this. Like, I understand why you want to do 9 out of 10 things the NFL does rule-wise, even if I don't agree with it. I can trace the through line. I genuinely don't know. And at Mike Golic Jr., if you're one of the people asking for the NFL to weed taunting out of the game, and I'm not talking about going over and giving the double birds to somebody on the other team after you score, but getting up and flexing, getting up and spiking a football near somebody else, like, we're going to see some extraordinarily lame proximity penalties come up through the first quarter of this season. and it's going to dominate the headlines, I'd imagine, for a stretch, the same way it did in Major League Baseball when we had pitchers dropping trow at the mound because you had umpires going out there and searching for the presence of those sticky substances here. Like, it dominates for a while. The difference with that is, again, we understood where it's coming from. And after that four-week period, usually, we see the flag subside because behavior starts to retract. So many of these things the NFL is about to flag them for are natural reactions. Things you do when you're hyped up in the middle of a game in a warrior contact sport. And so, again, at Mike Golic Jr., who asked for this? Because this is one of those NFL rule changes that I just can't make sense of. Or 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN. Because I know a lot of these people get up in arms about sportsmanship and the message it's sending to kids. But, man, like, how many of us saw that Bill Belichick clip that was circulating? Talking in the preseason about how hard you work for these moments, about how hard you bust your tail to go out there, and how he could judge the success of his team on the way they all responded to moments they should be celebrating out there. Who asked to take that away? But coming up next, who asked for this much in exchange for Eric Bledsoe as the, again, if you didn't know this offseason, now Grizzlies player is on his way out to the Clippers. We'll check in Los Angeles next here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
So I'm sitting around minding my own business, enjoying an NFL preseason Sunday. Don't judge me. I'm sitting there watching all of it. We had five rookie quarterbacks go out and get their first action. I don't have a problem. You have a problem. Jhené and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. here. And so I'm sitting around minding my own business trying to enjoy preseason football. Well, all of a sudden, ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski goes to Twitter and drops the Woj bomb that I don't think any of us were really expecting as he announced the Los Angeles Clippers were trading Patrick Beverley, Rajon Rondo, Daniel Turu to the Memphis Grizzlies in exchange for guard Eric Bledsoe. Sources told ESPN. And so to help make it make sense, we're heading to the Goodyear hotline to talk to our ESPN NBA reporter, Om Young-Masuk, who joins us now. And Om, I looked at this and my initial reaction was, all right, I mean, Eric Bledsoe's pretty good, but isn't he on like his eighth team already? How is he worth three players in this trade? So can you help me make sense of where the win is here for the Clippers in acquiring Eric Bledsoe for this kind of price tag?
All right, so the Clippers view this, and sorry to interrupt your Sunday rookie quarterback watching, okay, because that is important. I totally get it. Listen, the Clippers here, I think, are many different things. One, they were able to shave $30 million off luxury tax, which is probably chump change for Steve Ballmer. I totally get that, the richest owner in the NBA, but I think when you're talking about a season where the Clippers are looking at their situation with Kawhi Leonard out for the significant time, perhaps all of the entire season, the Clippers are looking at this like, okay, we need to be realistic here. And so we have a logjam of point guards, and we see that we can not only cut $30 million off our luxury tax, we can also free up a roster spot, maybe go get another backup center or a backup point guard, be able to play some of our younger guys that we've drafted. And also, you know, I think they look at Eric Bledsoe as a guy that, yes, he has kind of not had a good season last year with New Orleans. He's coming off some disappointing playoff performances dating back to Milwaukee. But they look at him as a younger, more durable point guard than, say, Patrick Beverley, because Patrick Beverley he's been injured quite often the last 2 years. And Rajon Rondo was a disappointment. He did not meet expectations, or at least what they were hoping to get out of him. And so they're looking at Bledsoe as a younger, more physical defensive guard who, while we, you know, look at his shooting and say, okay, there's lacking in outside shooting, well, Bledsoe can drive, kick out to their shooters. The Clippers feel they have plenty of shooters. And so they think that Bledsoe could potentially have a bounce back and also be able to be durable, play a ton of minutes, and kind of help out Paul George and Reggie Jackson.
You mentioned the timeline for Kawhi Leonard here, that injury during the postseason run. If it's as long as you're talking about here, then what becomes the realistic expectation for the Clippers? Like, I know Paul George had a resurgent postseason, but are we really still allowed to look at this team as competitive in the Western Conference that's going to get healthier this year?
Yeah, Lawrence Frank, the team president, thinks that they will remain competitive. And I think they will be, you know, in the hunt for a playoff spot. Perhaps the best case scenario is that they hold the fort down until maybe Kawhi Leonard comes back in time for the playoffs. But Lawrence also said after the draft that this is a significant ACL injury. He called it a torn ACL. It is officially listed as a partially torn ACL, so I guess it's all semantics. But you know they're going to take their time with Kawhi Leonard. They are not going to rush him back, and Kawhi's never been the type of guy that's going to rush back anyways. He takes his time as well. So I think the best-case scenario for the Clippers is they remain in contention for a playoff spot. Paul George has a, you know, maybe this might be an MVP Paul George type of season because he's now the guy for the team. Reggie Jackson does well, and perhaps this team looks a little bit like the team that won all these playoff games without Kawhi Leonard. Remember, Kawhi Leonard got hurt in game four of the second round. They still went on to make the Western Conference Finals. But I don't think the Clippers are thinking that they're going to be a top three team in the Western Conference without Kawhi Leonard. I think they understand that. And I think that's why you kind of saw this trade where they dealt away Patrick Beverley, one of the most beloved fan favorites on this team, for his defensive grit, intensity, and hustle. And so they create another roster spot, get to play some of their young guys and groom them while Kawhi is out. Remember, they also signed Justice Winslow to kind of help fill that void, and they stay afloat. And then if everything goes well, perhaps they have Kawhi Leonard for the playoffs.
Chenan Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio talking to ESPN NBA reporter Om Young-Masuk on the Goodyear Hotline. So we've got that move for the Clippers, who you mentioned could be competitive for a playoff spot, but when we're talking about top three in the West, that's the expectation for the Lakers. We've seen LeBron very active on social media already this offseason, Om, from the comments about people doubting and making jokes about the age of the roster to him posting pictures in the lab with Russell Westbrook getting to work. We haven't gotten to talk to you since that move happened with Russ. We know they're working right now, but how do you think that mix really trends for the Lakers of two players that people would argue very similar skill sets heading into this 2021 season?
Yeah, you know, don't call them team biofreeze to Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony. I think that will just fuel their fire even more. Listen, this team is 36 and above. Basically, they're trending in the wrong direction. But if you look at what they had last year and what they might have been missing, I think Russell Westbrook, you can criticize him for his perimeter shooting all you want, for sure, and maybe even his defense. But what he brings is two things that I think they were missing last year: intensity, desire, fire, and drive, and aggression. I thought too many times last year the Lakers were, you know, they were a little lackadaisical. They just seemed like, okay, we're going to wait till the playoffs and turn it on. Kind of like that, we won our championship, we know what we can do. And then, of course, injuries came into play, and Anthony Davis wasn't healthy. LeBron James came back late in the season, and they couldn't turn it on. I think what Russell Westbrook brings, besides that, maybe he'll also light a fire a little bit under Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, this is a big off season for him. Everybody wants to see him kind of like overhaul his body, get more physical, get stronger, you know, so he doesn't fall into another injury habit again where he's missing a lot of games. So perhaps that lights a fire under him. And also, I think what Russell Westbrook brings is that they need another playmaker to be able to run the second unit when LeBron James is out. I think the question mark here is, when all three are on the floor together, who's playing off the ball? Who's playing with the ball? Is Russell Westbrook going to be effective playing off the ball? LeBron James is the guy handling the ball. We know Anthony Davis can play off the ball, but can Russell Westbrook do it? So I think that's all going to have to be worked out for them. But I do think what they've done is they've added perimeter shooting. What we don't know about this team is their defense. I think that's what they're going to be lacking.
Yeah, it certainly was the calling card for that championship team a couple of years ago. And you're right, now has quickly turned into a question mark as we head into the upcoming season. You're the best, man. We appreciate the time and the help on this one. We'll talk to you soon about some NFL rookie quarterbacks, all right?
My man, I can't wait.
Om Young-Masuk, our ESPN NBA reporter, kind enough to join us on the Goodyear Hotline here. Didn't even have time to get into it with him. Jalen Green shading the entire city of Detroit, the number two overall pick in the NBA draft out of the G League Ignite team here, lighting a fire under the Motor City. Maybe we'll get to that at some point here. A lot of folks catching strays today around the world of sports that we can get into maybe in the bottom five from the NFL weekend that was in a little bit. But coming up next, let's head back to those quarterbacks that we talked about with Ohm, because we had five first-round picks at quarterback make their debuts as rookies this weekend on the field, and we saw a little bit of everything from the group. Coming up next, we'll tell you exactly who needs to start heading into week one of the regular season as we march on here. Chinay Ngolick Jr., Mike Golick Jr. with you on ESPN Radio and streaming on ESPN+.
Thanks for listening to Chinay Ngolick Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.